Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Chips of Chorlton. I'm Neil and I am joined by Duncan.
Hi. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't expecting that. I was hiding a burp.
It's all right.
Hi. It's usually the way around, isn't it?
Yeah. By Andy.
Hello.
And by Robin.
Hiya.
Hi.
No guest.
No guest.
No. I'm almost worried.
I can almost hear the viewing figures.
Yeah.
Dropping off.
Good
night, listeners.
Yes, and that's
it. Can almost hear us scrapping it right now.
Yeah, but I suppose for people who are interested, the last two podcasts were the most popular.
Oh, really?
Including...
Are we back?
Higgins.
The bitches are back.
Yeah, so, and now we are bringing it right back down. Right back down. So what have you guys been up to? And I'm looking at you, Robin. You did a little giggy-wiggy, didn't you?
Naughty Robin.
Naughty. I did. Yeah, had an affair with... Everything.
Boo!
was it good? Was it all right?
It was great. Yeah, it went really well. Yeah. I was pretty nervous going into it, especially after John said it's one of their biggest gigs that they've ever had to do. But it went really well. And
before the travelling, you went for a curry?
We went for a namaste, yeah.
What, before the sleeper bus?
Oh, yeah.
This is what...
Mad cunt.
I'm pretty sure they do that every time they go on tour. That's like a tradition. Unless it was just a treat for me.
Naturally, we're gonna come to the point.
Are they down to two chili paneer now when they go?
No, well, I think there were 12 of us, and I think we started six chili paneer.
Good God!
Yeah,
I mean, this is the total contradiction of having a really spicy curry and then getting on a small metallic rectangular bus that you can't shit in. There's something torturous about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That is amazing.
Did you feel the need to put a carrier bag in the toilet, do your business and throw it out the window?
Yeah, I think that's the closest I'm probably going to get to a sleeper bus is investing in sleeper bus nappies.
So we had the curry, got on the sleeper bus and, you know, had a few beers and fell asleep. Didn't shit myself in the night, which is the main thing.
Bonus.
Save that for when I got to Latitude on stage.
You shat yourself at Latitude.
Yeah, just the whole day, yeah.
And how was the whole circus, the whole,
the music industry?
You know, yeah, the whole lanyard sort of swanning about of, headlining a stage and all.
You know what, it was pretty nice.
Did you do any networking?
Any schmoozing?
Oh, I did a little bit, yeah. Spoke to Nadine Shah after the show.
Oh, yeah.
She was very nice. She very much enjoyed the gig and told us how much she liked Dutch Uncles as well, and that was nice.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Actual fan, perhaps?
Essentially,
that's the thing we all have is that I think we're all convinced we don't have actual fans anymore.
Yeah, until I see them in a room, all of them together, and then I don't believe it.
Yeah, the last few times I've had someone go, "Are you Dutch Uncles?"
You're now more famous around Chorlton for being Quizmaster.
I am. You get recognised. Recognised
for that. Yeah.
You're a quiz guy, aren't you?
Yeah. The amount of times I get
quizman.
Yeah. The amount of time I get quizzles now.
What quizzles? Immigration Cockney population. What quizzles?
I had my own festival experience on the subject. Subject of quizzes.
It was the same night, wasn't it? As well.
You're not the only one to headline a stage, mate. I headlined the note stage in the Space Pavilion at Blue Dot Festival last Saturday with my quiz. Which, you know...
Quizzles!
I know I say it a lot, but it really is a long way down, you know? I go through that artist accreditation for the third time, mind. Because it's the third... You know, it's the
oh,
third
yeah, first time we played the main stage.
Because the first time we went, we played the main stage in 2015, and then we did the podcast last year, and then it was just me and my driver / TM going into the quiz this time round. And it was just even more embarrassing, kind of, you know, I'd filled in the artist form and had nothing back, so because I did have a spare ticket for you, Andy, to see Kraftwerk, and it didn't come through.
It didn't.
And then when I got there to accreditation, I just went, I'm Phantom Quizzix. I'm headlining the note stage. And they went, can't even find the note stage. I was looking for it on the map. I was like, I can't find it here either. It's like, it's probably around the Space Pavilion. What'd you say it was? Quiz? I was like, yes, Phantom Quizzix. They were like, all right, well, there's no thing for you. But is it just you two? I was like, yeah. It's like, yeah, just a couple of wristbands. Get out my face. I kept hearing my own words in the back of my head, like, I played a main stage once. But it was nice to, and our good friend Pete Marshall was stage managing the stage I was on. So that was nice. And I had 15 teams, so.
And you weren't on at the same time.
I had a full room, what?
You weren't on at the same time as Kraftwerk.
I was not on at the same time. I was headlining above the granddaughter of Emmeline Pankhurst, which did look quite awkward when I was walking basically straight through her crowd to go get my rider, which didn't really exist.
Yeah, what does a quizman's rider look like?
Nothing. I may have lifted a drinks token from the prizes or two. No. Like, there were more than enough prizes. The top prize was 2 tickets for next year's festival.
Wow,
that's really great.
High stakes.
It was all above board, yeah. I had a drinks token. Like, that was literally it. And I had access to a private toilet, which is more...
Better than Robin.
Better than you.
No, you got me.
That was pretty much it. And then, did the quiz. Then went to see Working Men's Club after that, and they are great. And then Kraftwerk were great. The 3D glasses didn't work. I was kind of waiting halfway through the set for them just go, by the way, you all look really stupid.
Robin, well, you got your Peterloo thing coming up, haven't you?
Yes, that's... on the 16th of August, on the Friday. So I've been writing the music for From the Crowd, which is an event there where it's on 3 times during the day, 12:30 p.m., 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. outside the GMEX, or Manchester Central as it's called now. And it's going to be an immersive performance experience. Hopefully it's going to be good. So come down, yeah.
So last Thursday, the Mercury Prize nominations got announced. What's your initial reaction to the bands that made on to the list?
My initial reaction is the act I think is my personal favourite to win it was on there, so no surprises. In that respect, the one act who I thought might get on there that wasn't on there was Hot Chip. I thought they might end up getting another nod. I'm pretty sure they got one for The Warning.
Yeah, I think they've had one.
Yeah. And to me, it felt as if A Bathful of Ecstasy really was sort of... it's interesting with them. I always think they've had... the album problem, I think, has always been... It's been a really weird one to define what makes their album so different from the next one. But this most recent one just feels like a real solid... Mm. Collection.
Yeah, it was quite a few years since the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, they said they'd spent 5 years just putting this latest one together, and you can definitely tell.
Yeah,
that's definitely where it's at. And yeah, so I thought that would be on there, but I also thought Kate Le Bon would be on there. She is, and as I said, I think it's 1975's to lose, in a way, because I just don't think any other album made in from an act from this country has had. This doesn't get considered, I know, but it should do, really. I don't think any other albums had such a global effect, really. Because you look at their touring schedule now, like, you know, they're doing arenas all over the world. It's all kind of, like, it's all culminated in the world. Like, you know, their fan base was ready for them to knock it out of the park, and they did.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, I agree with the Hot Chip thing. I think that definitely should have got a nod, I think. I think we probably touched on this last time. Are we stupid to look for patterns within past winners, and what might win this time?
The only thing that makes me think 1975 won't win it is because Wolf Alice won it last year, and I think that's a fucking shit off if that's the case.
Yeah. I think it's I don't know what that, and I think that probably has bad indications for Fontaine's DC chances as well, and the fact that Wolf Alice was sort of a little bit more punky
as well.
And Foles. I don't know though. We'd covered this last time, didn't we? But I don't know if there's ever been, you know, two Mercurys in a row where very similar or even overlapping genres have won it back to back.
Probably not since
the indie heyday.
Yeah,
90s,
well, yeah, I mean, you had 2000s. Franz Ferdinand winning it, and then was it Elbow after that? I mean, I know they're not I know they're not remotely the same in terms of dynamic, but you're still looking at white bands.
Yeah.
In that respect.
Yeah.
Has Arctic Monkeys won it for the first album or the second album?
First album. It was Anthony and the Johnsons, won it, the year after Franz Ferdinand.
Oh, right. There you go.
Yeah.
And they beat a load of white indie boys to it.
So. Was that the year
that Young Knives were on and everything like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Good God.
Hard fi.
Good Lord.
Fucking hard fi.
We had a good old, after the recording of what podcast was it? The one with Venart. I think we went over to, we might have mentioned this last time, but we had a little little post drink round at Robin's. Neil, you left your own home to come to it, and it's across the road. And then I think, yeah, we were trying to play the game of, you know, what, trying to find ourselves in the related artists, but obviously stumbled on the Young Knives. And how that ever got any critical acclaim ever is beyond me, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
we were still screaming it in your kitchen at 4 a.m.
Of course.
Yeah. I was, yeah, still screaming
it. And I nearly fell asleep in the park on the way home. Because that's just how it is when you have to go through the park to avoid all the quiz fans. It's like, oh, no. Leave me alone. I have a right to privacy. Sleeping in the park at 4 a.m. on a Monday.
Oh, bloody hell. Finding that video of you singing Razor Light somewhere else to my cat.
Well, everyone listening to the podcast knows now, Rob, so thank you.
I think I messaged our little WhatsApp group with the record sales of every act from the Mercury this year, which I thought was fascinating. I'd never seen it before.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fascinating in the sense that it's wholly depressing that the 1975 have only sold 138,000 records. Like, I mean, there, to me, in my head, when I think
was
about
that
the
in this country, or is that globally?
It must be this country.
Yeah.
But in my head, as one of the biggest bands, let's say in this country, to me that's not platinum already, then something's gone wrong. Mm. But what's gone wrong is, of course, no one fucking sells any records.
Yeah,
but we don't know if this includes streaming stats, do we?
I think it. Well, it didn't say that it didn't.
Right. So
and they're counted in the charts. So I imagine
it does. Then
I imagine it does include that. Mm. But also the jazz artist Seed Ensemble. 374 records. I don't know what that means though, because I don't know if they're anything in the jazz world. I don't know how record sales are in the jazz world. If anything, you'd think they'd be stronger. Do you know what I mean?
It's like, come on. I mean, it's got to be shit then, hasn't it? That's what I'm thinking. If any 340
well, maybe. Or it might come out like
well,
last week.
It's got to be shit.
It kind
it?
Of feels yeah. like. Where all this is going, it just feels like, what is the fucking point of the Token Jazz nomination every
That's
year?
That's another thing, isn't it?
It's like, it's the same as the argument of where's the metal album every year?
Yeah.
And everything needs representing like that. It's just like, shouldn't it just be sort of the 12 most, like, you know, they shouldn't just force through a jazz
It seems weird.
Album just to make it sure that there's a jazz album.
Do you think maybe, I can't remember what the nominations have been of all the awards in the past, but do you think they just did it once and thought it was a good way to branch out and then just think, and it's sort of like a kooky little tradition
I don't know.
Now,
at the same time, have any of us actually listened to this album?
No. It might be amazing.
I think it might be amazing, so... It's no offence to the band whatsoever. It's just in terms of its reading, it does... Especially when you look at the album sales. Because I remember when we were doing Oh Shudder, I think it was Oh Shudder, it might have been Big Balloon, but there was definitely a year where we thought... You never know. Like, we always think it's going to happen.
Year.
And
yeah.
then someone actually says the word Mercury in the studio. It's like, you fucked it. You've completely jinxed
well,
the whole thing.
Our odds were pretty good for Oh Shudder.
Our odds are good every year, Rob. Our odds are probably good right now. Because people don't know when it's out. They just go, Dutch Uncles, 33-1.
Yeah.
And nobody checks. Because nobody's putting a bet on. Because I think as soon as anyone puts a bet on, they immediately think it's suspicious.
Mm. Yeah.
But... In regards to that, though, I remember there was one year that we did it where we thought, well, we might be in with a chance. And it turned out that every act that had been nominated had sold over 20,000 records already. And it kind of seemed a bit like, well, do any of these bands need it? It was the year that Savages were on. I remember that much.
Okay, yeah.
Can't remember who else. Must have been 24.
Not many people sell 20,000 records anymore, do they?
Well, clearly not.
No. So,
which is pretty bonkers.
How much?
I think in that respect, it's kind of nicer to see an album that's only had 300 sales.
Yeah.
And it's probably, you know.
Yeah. But like I say, I'm just very I'm confused about why that album in particular, if it's sort of... Mm. Not that maybe like the pinnacle of that sort of circle of jazz, why it sold so little, or maybe the record sales
well,
are even less
about
in jazz.
Jazz, I'm afraid. And that's the whole point about jazz, that no one actually knows about it. That's the point of it. Right?
Who do you want to win, and who do you think will win then?
I think, despite the fact Slow Tie and Dave are the front runners, and I'm sure there's every reason for them to be the front runners of it all, I think the 1975 will win it personally because I don't think anyone has quite tapped into the pop music with a political angle on the whole thing, and It's truly a woke pop album.
Yeah.
In some respect.
It's just interesting that we haven't mentioned Black Midi among all those. I noticed someone tweeted to us the other day, before there was Black Midi, there was Dutch Uncles.
Well, you could argue that they could be in the jazz category, really, even though it's incredibly math rock and whatever. And they were great at Sounds of the Other City.
Yeah, I saw them at Yes, start of the year, and they're a really good band. I've listened to the album, and I think it's good. I think they could have put the single on it. It just feels like a bit of a... Yeah, look at us move, not putting the single on the album.
Yeah, but you're a traditionalist, Rob. You want to be institutionalised. You want those singles.
You like Idols, don't you, Neil?
Yeah, Idols is...
What's your thoughts on that?
I well-deserved. I suppose looking down the list, I've listened to the majority of records on there. The Anna Calvi record, I've re-listened to that, and that's really good. So I'm sort of really happy that they're in there. But would have thought maybe Tom York would have got a nomination for Anima.
Uh-huh.
I would have thought James Blake...
I thought James Blake was a glaring omission.
I would have thought Twilight Sad might have been in there, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But you can't. It's a good list. I think my reflection on it, it's probably one of the better lists for the Mercury Prize than I've seen for quite a while. So I'm quite happy. Yeah. I think it's got... Apart from the poor jazz band, really, I don't...
Well, we need to listen to the album first.
We do. How many of these albums have any of us actually listened to?
I'd say
how half-baked and entitled we feel to do a podcast on this.
Well, I want to reserve listening to them until we do our Mercury special coming to you, whatever the date of the ceremony.
So 19th is September the 19th. We will be doing our live stream again in the presence of Matt Durant, who joined us last year, and with extra special guest, Peter Broadhead.
Peter.
Of Ellie Goulding fame.
Of Ellie Goulding fame, sorry, yes. He will be joining us. So stay tuned, kids.
Yeah.
Kind of stupid fucking questions, that.
Thank you, Duncan.
He's getting a bit more scouse, isn't he?
He's a bit scouse last week as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's all not.
Who'd have thought that because we don't have a guest on this week, we are a bit short of questions for our podcast? Oops. Oh, well.
I tried to tweet out like a really deadpan, like, how shit are we thing? Have you got any questions for us?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how it came across. I'm really bad at tweeting.
I am terrible. I have to
second guess myself on everything.
That's why I don't tweet a lot.
I try to be funny, and then
Rob,
I think...
Rob, you're really good at tweeting, I think.
Is he?
Thanks, mate. I've been trying to do it more, but the thing is, like, most of my tweets are about Stockport County.
Yes, yeah, I remember that's
why. And the majority of my followers are county fans, which is no bad thing, but, you know, if I do a tweet about music, it gets very little response, whereas I do a county one, it's just fucking hundreds of people like it. Like,
it's a bit like when we used to have, like, those Facebook posts... Tickets on sale, things like that.
Yeah,
and get like 3 likes for your tour.
You get like 3 likes.
You
and
get
then...
3 likes for your tour, but then you put a picture of me and you shopping for beer in Aldi for the album. 400 likes. Yes.
I think actually the likes to audience ratio is usually pretty much on point.
Yeah.
Like if you tweet about a gig, like can't wait to play Norwich tonight. 4 likes. You can guarantee there'll be at least 4 people there, or possibly at most.
It's always Norwich,
the tour manager.
Yeah, always Norwich that gets called out, isn't it, on this podcast?
Yeah, we've got a good experience, Neil.
It is quite far away.
Yeah, it's just I suppose I've never been to Norwich with you. So that probably shows how.
Yeah, you've not missed anything, to be honest.
I think we had one good gig there. I think we had one good gig.
What with the Future Heads?
Yeah, supporting Future Heads.
That was a good one. Yeah,
yeah.
That was a good gig. Yeah.
And then when we thought we'd go back the following year, it would be, oh, we'd have, there's no one there.
Yeah. there was no one there. And not only that, but, I mean, people who've played a gig will know just how frustrating this is. But the bass cabs for the were underneath the stage at Waterfront 2. So it was bad enough that we had the circle of death, but not even enough people to make the circle.
Yeah,
the circle of death.
So the arc of, is it the arc of death?
The arc of death. Yeah.
Or doom.
Doom,
yeah, but there weren't even enough people to even make it look like an arc. It was literally just... It felt
there was
like,
no correlation to anything.
It was more like playing an emergency bus shelter, to be honest. But all the bass was underneath us, so we couldn't hear anything. My piano was just vibrating across
slowly
the stage.
Slowly off the stage, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've wiped that gig from my memory. Isn't that strange?
Phil has done his usual top 5 question. So it's top 5 band arguments, internal or external. So arguments you've had with other bands as well.
Mm.
Ooh, you mean like beef?
Beef.
Just, I think general.
Fever Brother.
Oh, yeah, that was like...
Have we mentioned this before? This is the problem. We've got to too many episodes on this where we're not sure...
I don't know this story, so...
Okay. Do you remember Viva Brother? Or Brother, as they were called originally?
I do, yeah, yeah. I remember Brother, yeah.
So, yeah, they were enemy darlings for a bit, and then it turned out they were shit. And, yeah, and then they were recording their album like a week before we were recording ours.
In the same studio.
They were recording their second album a week before we were recording our third album. Yeah, and what happened? Did they leave a note for us first, or did we leave something for them? What was it?
I think they said something like, they started it with the usual, hey, Dutch ovens. Lol. Shout out to Simon Rimmer at that point as well. Hey, Dutch ovens, don't touch our Marmite.
I'll tell you what, put me on a fucking Power League pitch of them pricks anything.
Oh, yeah, you get involved. You're a spitter.
That's when I get involved.
Remember that charity Power League football tournament where we all got pretty much into a fight with one of the other team? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I got elbowed in the back.
And Pete got shoved.
And I remember starting on the guy that elbowed me in the back, and then the referee started going, no, you can't do that. And I was like, fuck off, mate, you know that's a foul. This is for fucking charity. and everyone in our same group was just laughing at us all the time. Always laughing.
Always.
Yeah, I feel like that competition sort of summed up our band. Like a lot of endeavour, a lot of aggression, finished last.
Yeah. We have got progressively better, but yeah, no, there was the, you know who it was against? It was against Comfortable on a Tightrope, who do a lot of indie gigs around Manchester. That's who we had a fight with.
Oh.
Yeah, when Pete got in a proper fight with someone.
He got shoved, didn't
he? Oh, and it was great, yeah.
We won, though, didn't we? We won that game?
Yeah. Your brother finally came
out. Andy,
your brother
one.
Finally came out of his hangover, scored a screamer. And then we won that game. It was like, yeah!
Yeah.
It would have been different. It would have been different if we hadn't had 14 pints there before.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm glad that we won that.
So any other external arguments, then? Other band beef, sorry, go on.
Usually, where to eat before a gig.
Oh, yeah, that always brings up some saltiness.
Yeah. It's usually more kind of passive-aggressive arguments, so isn't it? It's like everyone just kind of keeps themselves like, well, it's
I think generally it's the passiveness as well and choosing where to eat. We'll walk down a road, for example, in Sheffield, and we'll call
it the headless stag do every time.
And we'll walk up to a place. We've got 45 minutes before we're on stage.
Yeah.
Walk up to a place, look at the menu, and no one says anything.
Yeah.
It's just silence. And then someone will say, maybe Pete, to be fair to him, we'd probably say, should we have a look somewhere else?
It literally says, best pizza in town.
And then it happens.
Best place in the world.
And it happens again, and then it's 35 minutes until we're due on stage.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, okay, so service is going to sit down is going to be 5 minutes. Service is going to take 20 minutes. I've basically got 10 minutes to eat this meal. Yeah, that's infuriating.
Yeah, end up having bad food.
Yeah,
it's always the best roast in town. It's like, I fancy a roast, but not that one.
It's
20 minutes before
no one's
going
bragging
on stage.
Too much. Yeah.
Well, do you remember before one of our worst ever gigs at the Drop?
Oh, yes.
Lewisham?
We had a full Shoreditch. We had a full on curry.
That was the one time that we made the easy decision and went to the curry house next door to the venue and all had madrasses and, you know.
Four pop drums each.
It really was.
Yeah, like, it was full on. Yeah,
I danced with unbuckled trousers that evening.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what is that? I made a pact to myself then. Only have a pasta before shows. After that,
we quite often do Wagamamas, don't we? That's quite.
So just to, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
It's fine. after that gig, I imagine that's what maybe purgatory is. Having a stomach full of like vindaloo or something, playing to three people who love it. Like there's a sort of, but I'm in a lot of pain. I need a poo. There's a lot of like, there's a lot of contradictory things going on. Ultimately, you're entertaining someone. You take pleasure from that, but you need a shit.
Pleasure from that.
Yeah, well, maybe not. But
yeah,
and the gig never ends.
Yeah, and the band before us had their own mics. And they played to the last people.
MPA,
fucking losers.
Okay, is it quite a good question has just come in. How do you find the balance between each member's input to create something everyone enjoys to play?
That's quite a good question. It's a good question for any band. I think every band does it differently.
So how do you do it?
Well, I think actually probably I'm maybe not best placed to answer it, but my perspective is different from Robin's and Duncan's because ultimately I get presented with things almost and I say a bit similar to everything, I think, where I sort of have the in my ivory tower, are able to listen to it and pore over it for a while and then give my critique, which is both diplomatic and hopefully truthful. So there's no point not being true. Well, exactly. So I often quite enjoy that process when it's great because there's nothing better to hear a great song in the making or a great demo in the making and then imagine how it might be produced or presented, which is sort of what I hopefully bring to the band. So that's great. But obviously the most difficult part of it is when I don't like it. And that's not necessarily to say it's bad, but it just hasn't clicked with me. And everyone else likes it. And that's a really difficult position to be in. Because ultimately you can critique it to a point where you might change small things. But if the general idea in itself isn't gelling with you, then it's really difficult to express that.
Has that happened a lot?
No, not really.
I wouldn't have
But it has happened. It usually happens. And again, like any demo process, there's usually a bit of fluff. And again, I can sit here and say that from my ivory tower because I haven't worked really hard on it and sort of made, you know, got the creative juices flowing and made something. But there is usually a lot of stuff at the beginning which isn't as good as the stuff at the end, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the idea of shared contentment between the music, I think it's very hard to find. I think from a writing perspective, usually you know that any idea that comes quickly will probably have that shared vision.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because it's there and it's fresh and it's come so naturally. And I think when you feel an idea come naturally, it gives it a special aura almost to you. Like, not to the listener. They don't, you know, they wouldn't be able to tell which ones have been slaved over for months and which ones haven't.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, between the four of us, I mean, this is, I suppose, this is like an unspoken argument, really, to go to that other question of who folds first a lot of the time. Because I think I'd be interested to know throughout all of our five albums just how many of those songs all four of us are like great in all that lot. Because I think for a lot of, you know, there's a lot of songs I like that I know. You know, Pete's not here to
to
input on this, but I know there's a lot of songs that I like that have made albums that he doesn't like, and the other way around. There's three songs particularly I can think of on Big Balloon that I'm not happier on there. Thankfully, one of them was too hard to play live, so we never did it. But then the other two? Well, I don't know, it's definitely two. I think there's a third. I feel like there's a third. I'm talking about Combo Box and Overton, just for, you know, for the reference for you guys. I feel like there is a third, though. And I just remember thinking when we did Overton, it was a very interesting song, but it didn't fit with the rest of the body of work.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like if this song makes the album, I'll know we've not written enough for the album to really speak as a cohesive body. And then with Combo Box, I think we'd run out of time. That was a song that was 3 months long to make, and it was just the original idea that had spurned it on had got so distorted and it had been simplified again and again and again and again, but it still felt really mashed up to me and I didn't quite get it. And I didn't understand why everyone else got it, but I wrote the lyrics to it, so it became finished. I need to exercise that power next time. And you tell yourself when you don't see 10 songs you like, you tell yourself, well, next time don't finish the song that, you know, that's the power I could have if I chose to exercise that.
Yeah. It's strange in a way, isn't it? Very odd. But it's a good exercise in a way to take a song that you might not necessarily like and don't object against it, but see where it goes. I find that's maybe a skill that I've acquired about not kicking up too much of a shitstorm about a song that I don't like and just seeing where it goes right to the end. And obviously with us, that's quite difficult because ultimately we don't have any other songs at that point. Yeah. So it's probably going to make the album. I felt that way a bit about Baskin. Right. When I first heard that and played it, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And then I let it go and I didn't kick up anything about it like I might have done in the past. I let it go, and then you did the vox of the demo, and then we recorded it. And when we recorded it, because we recorded the album in a more of sort of like a two guitar bass drums thing, it really made much more sense when I heard it as a live take. So I was happy that I didn't, you know,
yeah,
veto it, I guess.
That was the license you initially agreed us as writers, because we did have a lot of enthusiasm for that track.
Yeah.
And then it worked out. But then it turned, like, you know, I think if Combo Box had been easier to play live and actually been something that impressed live, I probably would have, you know, I could have relaxed about the fact that I'd ended up writing the song about fried chicken, not about being one's own god, which was the idea originally, before then deciding to call it after a Dixie Chicken piece. Like, that was ridiculous.
I've got to be used to, you know, accepting criticism, and that's fine, that's part of it, you know, everyone has their input into this. Well, when I bring an idea that I'm particularly passionate about, it's usually made it because it is better than ones where I've kind of brought half-baked ideas and they've sort of lasted a few months and eventually they've sort of disappeared.
So when doing your writing, you've got something to present to the guys, do you sometimes think, you know, Andy or Pete, when do your people like this? Or do you think, I like this, I hope they like it? You know what I mean? It's because there's a weird kind of gateway that probably, as you were saying, you kind of hold, don't you, Andy?
But I think you
already suspect what people are going to like and not like when you're presenting your idea. And I immediately start talking, like, I remember in previous albums, I've shown you guys, like, GarageBand recordings, and as soon as my voice starts, I start talking over it to you to say, right, this is what I'm already thinking about this bit, right? It's like, you've not even heard it yet. I'm already talking over the idea as I present it. So, yeah. Still get nervous. Even after, like, 10 years of, like, doing this. Still just go, God, I hope they don't think I'm a dick. Even after all this time.
But I think also a valuable... Well, not valuable, but a legitimate creative input can be, I don't give a fuck if they don't like it. I have genuine belief this is great.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's built out of like some weird arrogance, but I think that's fine. I think it's fine to think that.
Yeah.
I think one thing we can say for sure, one thing that makes me feel a lot more rest assured about where we are now as a band to how we were when we were in the thick of writing a lot of albums all the time, constantly. So we do listen to a lot more music now than we ever used to. Maybe just because of doing the podcast and not sounding like completely ill-informed idiots. Mm. Only half. Like,
I was just thinking of Garth Marenghi quote. I'm one of those few people who've written more albums than they've listened to.
I think there was almost a point where that was probably the case for us.
Kate Bush, Japan.
Yeah, it's like, does it sound like Kate Bush in Japan or Tears of Fears? No, fine.